Starting off our special report on the reverse retirement wave on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, I'm pleased to welcome my expert professional panel. Jeff Neal of ICF International is here, John Salamon of FMP Consulting, and Ron Sanders of Booz Allen, terrific experts in the field of human resources in the federal government, here to help me understand the results of our special survey on the reverse retirement wave. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me today. Ron, since you're joining us by phone, we'll start with you. When you looked at the results of this survey, tell me a couple of the questions or a couple of the data points that you see from this that you either found surprising or you found tremendously confirming of thoughts that you've had about the federal workforce and the lack of people retiring in the numbers that we've expected them to over the past 10 to 15 years. Thanks very much for starting us off, Ron.
My initial reaction to the results is a bit mixed, but I'll have to add a bit of alarm to the mix, because while I think the results, and particularly the respondent demographics, are what you would expect, generally a more senior, older, higher graded respondent actually took the time to fill out the survey. And I think that's pretty much representative of the federal government's population today, almost across the board. What I worry about is what that demographic is going to look like in 3 to 5 years, because I do think there is a retirement bubble. I think the numbers bear that out. You have a fairly substantial number of folks who have been postponing retirement, and I think that can only last so long. And I worry about the trough that's behind them, because we have now been managing the federal government's workforce largely through hiring freezes and attrition for the better part of half a decade. And I know the folks on the phone have been through that before, and we know the negative consequences of that. And it's almost what's not in the survey that is as daunting as what's in the survey.
The trough is something that, Ron, you and I have talked about before. Jeff and John, you've both worked through this from various perspectives. John Salamon, I'll go to you next. What did you see in the numbers here that either confirmed suspicions or data that you've seen before, or conversely surprised you, something that you didn't expect? Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Francis. It's great to be here. You know, a couple things. I mean, first and foremost, I think one of the slides that jumped out at me is not surprising, is that individuals are staying beyond retirement eligibility from 1 to 3 years, and then as many as up to 10 years beyond retirement eligibility. Obviously, it drops off after the 4 to 6 year mark when they're retirement eligible. But people are staying beyond retirement eligibility, which I think is something that is not surprising. There were a couple of interesting points, I think. For those that have retired, we're not seeing, or we did not see, or they did not indicate that there was the opportunity or that they participated in any knowledge transfer or training of their of the people that were kind of moving up into the ranks or into their positions. But it was interesting to see a slight shift in a more positive direction for those individuals that are reaching retirement eligibility. They seemed a little bit more in focus and positive in terms of the ability, or at least the interest, in training those that were in the pipeline behind them.
What do you think is driving that, Jeff? I want to hear your thoughts, too, about surprises and or confirmations. But what do you think is driving that? Because that's a topic that you've written about on your blog, chiefhro.com, on a number of occasions. And this is something that you work very heavily on, both at DHS and DLA.
It's interesting when you start looking at people providing some training for the people who are going to replace them. I think the biggest driver probably in them not doing it is that a lot of agencies don't invest in building a big pipeline. They worry about the one person who gets the job. And if I'm retiring, most likely I'm not going to have any overlap with the person who's replacing me. So I think the fact that we tend to treat these as sequential actions, where someone retires and then someone new comes in, we don't give them the opportunity to have any overlap. And absent that overlap, the person who's leaving doesn't have a chance to train the person who's going to replace them or who's going to fill their job. It may not be that they're being replaced.
The thing that I think jumped out at me the most is the discussion about phased retirement in the comments. It wasn't so much in the numerical results, but the comments about phased retirement goes to your point about the way people think about what the next generation looks like. What did you see that was either a confirmation or a surprise to you, Jeff?
A couple things in here. One is, you know, I've been talking about this retirement wave for a long time, and the fact that we shouldn't be expecting this massive wave of retirements. I think that that whole thing has been incredibly overblown for 15 years because people look at the data the wrong way. They look at a workforce today and say, oh my goodness, in X number of years, 60% of the people will be eligible to retire. Yes, but that's only if you have a static workforce and nobody retires. So 10 years from now, a very large number of the people who will become eligible to retire or are now will have retired and been replaced with people who are not eligible. So this prediction of a massive retirement wave, I think one former OPM director called it a retirement tsunami.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a tsunami. It's never going to be a tsunami. And that's one of the things that I think drives that home as a piece of data in here. What factors impacted your decision to retire? This is on the people who are already retired.
Mm-hmm.
And the two biggest numbers were I was ready to retire and I could afford to retire. So although at a micro level, one or two people at a time maybe decide to retire based on a horrible experience with a supervisor, or they've been furloughed one time too many, or had one pay freeze too many, for the most part, people make that decision to make it one of their biggest life changes they make to retire based on can they afford it and are they ready to retire? And your data brings that point home very clearly. That's what drives people to retire. So not surprised that there's not been a retirement tsunami. And I think this data shows very clearly that the big driver of retirement is those two things. Can I retire? And do I want to retire?
Francis, let me pull that thread because I suspect Jeff and John have done this too. One of the things I've always looked at as a Chico was something we coined in IRS called propensity to retire, and that is how many years somebody waits after they become eligible to actually go. And one of the things we found, and these patterns persist almost without regard to the economy, especially at the more senior levels, is that it's a function of occupation. And as you would expect, for example, an IT person has a much higher propensity to retire post-eligibility than, say, an HR person or a budget person whose skills may not be as marketable. And I've seen those patterns in domestic agencies and in defense, and they do vary depending on the health of the external economy, but not a lot. And that's something that I wish every Chico spent more time looking at, because I think then they're going to be much better able to model what that pipeline needs to look like. And I'll underscore what Jeff said, and Francis, I think you alluded to this. I am hugely disappointed in the lack of response, and I put the burden mainly on agencies for this, the lack of response to phased retirement. The four of us have been talking about the need to transition our most senior experienced workers, not to cut them off, not to have an abrupt, I'm here today and I'm gone effective Monday, but to have them phased out so that they can impart their skills and their institutional memory and knowledge to their successors. And I thought the phased retirement approach, while I would quibble with some of the details and the regulations, I thought it was spot on, and I'm hugely disappointed that it really hasn't caught on like I thought and hoped it would.
You know, it's surprising. I think Ron's right that we expected more out of phased retirement, but I wonder if what we designed, we collectively, meaning government, former government, folks like us and the folks in government now, if what we designed was a program that was focused on what agencies need and what chief human capital officers need and not necessarily on what the market wants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may very well be that phased retirement is a product that won't sell. If, in fact, I'm retiring because I'm ready to retire, maybe I'm ready to say, okay, I don't want to go to work at all tomorrow, not I'd like to go to work for 3 hours tomorrow. And so it may be that what we've designed is a product that will flop because there's no real demand for it on the part of the retirees or potential retirees.
And that's nothing to be ashamed of. There have been many products over the years that have been fine products, well-intended, that just haven't been appealing. The appeal of phased retirement or some kind of knowledge transfer, I think, also hits at the heart of the point of the special report. I mentioned earlier the title of the special report's Reverse Retirement Wave. The subtitle is Managing a Workforce That's Aging in Place, because that's the reality of the situation. And Ron, you mentioned it at the beginning when you talked about your findings, your interpretation of the demographics that are here. And John, you mentioned it before we went on the air. The demographics of the people who are thinking about retirement and have it on their minds are such that even though they're staying in government, and the retirement numbers that we see from OPM month after month after month in many cases aren't even up to what they expected, and my sense of what they expected is, well, that's kind of low. So we're not getting anywhere near the kinds of people numbers retiring to get to the tsunami thing that you talked about, Jeff. So it strikes me that the situation here is, if I'm trying to think about what my workforce looks like in 5 years, it's more likely now that it's 3 to 5 years older than it is today, than that it's 3 to 5 to 10 years younger than it is today. Is that a fair read on my part?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair read. And we've talked about this and kind of getting back to the tsunami. I think, you know, if you look at the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey and the president's budget, the results indicate that, you know, 25% of the workforce will retire over the next 5 years, or will, you know, intends to retire. So you're looking at about 5% of the workforce that's eligible to retire, to walk out the door. So I think the tsunami isn't going to hit, and I agree with everything that's been said. What I and Francis have likened this on your show before, it's a steady, slow lava flow that we have of retirements. But we have this strong undercurrent of people quitting the federal government. So what I think, where you're absolutely right, the workforce will be older in 3 to 5 years. Where we need to focus attention, it doesn't really get at it in this report, but what we need to focus attention is, how do we keep the millennials that are walking out the door? Because if those GS-13s, 15s that responded to your survey move into more senior executive positions, it's going to put incredible pressure on them, because there's nobody in the pipeline, or the pipeline may be drying up to backfill for their positions. So they're going to have more responsibility. The adage of doing more with less really are going to be at a potential disadvantage if we don't keep the pipeline fresh behind them.
One of the topics that we'll take on in this special report, especially on Friday when we look at Workforce 2025, will be, or rather Thursday when we look at Workforce 2025, will be kind of the inference that you're making there. Managing a workforce that's aging in place, in my view, partially implies, how do we build that next generation for the people who do depart? So I hope that's one of the topics that people will find some instruction and value on. Jeff, your reaction to Ron's term propensity to retire and the value in looking at that, because I like that term a lot. He's used it on the program before. And I wonder how much of that kind of evaluation you did, first of all, and how much you see when you talk to your peers who are still in government.
Well, one of the things we looked at DLA in particular was when people retired, because it is important. Knowing when someone's eligible is only the beginning of understanding, because you have to know then, okay, when they're eligible, how long do they stay? What we found at DLA is people stayed about 3 years on average after retirement. It did vary with the type of job they had. You know, if I'm working in a warehouse, there's a very good chance I'm not going to retire and go out and find another job doing warehouse consulting or something like that. Mm-hmm. If you're an IT person, you're generally in a high demand market, and you could retire and go out and get another job. And so that kind of stuff does drive people to retire earlier. One other thing we need to keep in mind, though, when we're looking at all these numbers is, you know, we look at the federal government, and we have to realize that the federal government is a part of a greater labor market. And the national labor market is very different from what it was a few years ago. You know, we had a baby boom after World War II. I was a product of it. You may be too young to have been a product.
I just barely made it.
Okay.
I'm not. I'm a millennial myself.
Oh, yeah. Previous millennium?
Wow. But,
sorry.
My first reaction is wow, and my second reaction is nicely done.
Thank you. But you know, the workforce, the labor market is aging. The birth rates in this country are down. And so the entire labor market is getting older. But people are also working a lot longer than they used to. Sometimes because people are in better health and they want to do something productive, and sometimes simply because they can't afford to retire. But people are working longer, and so what we're gonna see, I think, in the entire labor force in the country is an aging labor market, an aging labor force. And I also
I think too that Jeff, work life patterns have changed.
Mm-hmm, they have.
And you can see that in the survey. I'll overuse the plumbing metaphor that we've all seemed to adopt. I think the pipeline is clogged at the top, and frankly, we don't have a plunger to clear it. And I think millennials who come to the workforce, including the federal workforce, with a propensity to stay for a few years and then move on, are finding, A, that the barriers of moving on within the federal government remain insurmountable. It is still very hard to move from one agency to another, with only a few exceptions. So they tend to move on outside the federal government. And Francis, you and I have talked about this before. We have made reentry so hard that we lose the benefit of what they may learn when they wander, when they go off to the private sector or to academia. Acquire new skills, we make it exceedingly hard. We make the sacrifice too great for them to want to come back, when we ought to be looking at a career path that moves in and out of the government. And frankly, I'll credit the Military Commission on Compensation, for example, has included recommendations that allow uniformed service members to do things like have sabbaticals or exchange or even leave and come back. Mid-career recruiting, these are all things that we need to embrace on the civilian side, and we just haven't.
John, you were the person who first brought to my attention the tremendous problem, which you alluded to a little bit earlier, but Ron's really getting into here, which is the quit rate among people in the millennial cohort who come in for a while, and in many cases, at least anecdotally, what I hear is they look above them and they go, these folks aren't retiring. I'm not going to have an opportunity to move up at the level that I would if I went to academia or the nonprofit sector or even the private sector commercial. So I'm gone. And there's two problems there that we've discussed before that I'd like you to explore a little bit. One is what Ron mentioned a moment ago, there's no attraction for them to come back because of the mechanisms that are in place. But secondly, there's not much attraction for them to come back because there's no reason for them to believe that in 2 or 5 or 10 years, if they were to pursue a career in government again, that things would be any different, that they wouldn't run into the same problem that they're running into in the situation they're in today.
Yeah, and I think those are great points. And the other thing is, I don't know if we really fully understand why they're leaving. Are they not engaged? Are they not doing work that is meaningful? Do they come into the office and have a bad experience on day one? Or did they want to just come in and have a 2 to 3 or 5 year short career in the government and look for opportunities to come back in? The challenge, and I agree with Ron 150%, is that it's very difficult to get them to come back. Because the mechanism to bring them back in is, well, we can non-competitively bring you back in at the rate or the level in which you left. Well, that's not, doesn't make any sense. If someone leaves the government and gets 3 to 5, 10 years of private sector experience and then has to recompete for a job when they have maybe 3 to 5 years of government experience, or you bring them back in at a GS-13 or, whatever level they left, it does not seem reasonable to expect that it's going to be easy to bring them back in that manner.
I think we have to rethink what the workplace is going to be like in the future. If you look at this, we always talk about how people come into government expecting to stay 30 years. That's because in our society as a whole, that was the model that was prevalent for many decades. People would go to work for a company. The company would have a good pension plan. They would work for that company for their entire life, and then they would retire and relax somewhere. And the government tends to follow the greater society. It doesn't tend to lead. So, what we do is lagging the rest of society by a few years. So I think what we're seeing is that the bulk of the workforce, the millennials in particular, are, and people in the future, the next generations too, are going to be people who go to work for an employer and view that as a job that they will have for a few years, and then they'll go do something else. And instead of trying to come up with ways that we might entice people to stay in government for a long time, we do need to make it easier for people to move in and out. We also need to rethink how we do some of these things. You know, if you look at the age numbers in the survey, it's a relatively senior group age-wise and grade level-wise. And that's one of the problems for the millennials. If I go into an organization and I say, wow, look at that, I could be at the top of this organization in another 15 years, I'm probably not going to wait around 15 years for the government. And so that means I'm not going to be interested in trying to stay around in government and move up. So I'm going to go out and do something else. And when someone says, hey, why don't you consider going back into the government? I'm probably going to say, been there, done that. I don't need to go back there. I wouldn't be surprised if we find that somebody who goes to work in the private sector, who's a millennial, also doesn't want to go back to the same company again. And we may be having the problem of being viewed as the same very large company. So it may very well be that the government's not highly unusual right now in that respect. We're just not adjusting quickly enough to the fact that we have a labor force that's very different from what we grew up with.
So I've pulled a couple of concepts out of our conversation so far. We're almost out of time already, and time flies when I talk to all three of you. I'm grateful for your participation. But I've pulled a couple of concepts out of here that I think I wanted to ask each of you to talk a bit about as we wrap up, regarding how somebody will manage a workforce that is aging in place in the next 3 to 5 to 10 years. The first point is people primarily decide to retire primarily on their own terms rather than external influences. The second is the necessity for providing movement in and out, not just for millennials, especially based on what you just said, Jeff, but also for folks who are further along in their careers or whoever will follow the millennials if we're looking at this 10 years from now. And the third one is along the lines of planning Workforce 2025, which I mentioned we'll talk about on Thursday. And that is the subset of that is matching the people that the government has and will go after with the skill sets that will be needed to execute the mission, whatever the mission may be, 5 and 10 years from now. That's the one that we haven't really focused on yet. And so as we start, I'll start with you as we close, Ron. On each of those three points, any thoughts that you have on hard advice that somebody should apply as they're thinking about this concept of managing the workforce from here on out?
All right, I'll try to remember and take them in order, especially since I'm a first millennial
first retiree. Millennial. I'm writing that down, first millennial, yeah. I love it.
And you'll never let me forget it. So look, I think people will tell you that they retire on their own terms, but I think it's a combination of all of the above. External factors do matter, who they work for matters, mission matters, morale matters. But I do think one of the real powers of this current, and I hope continued focus on big data, is that you can still model that and reduce the margin of error in terms of predicting what your workforce is going to look like 2, 3, and 5 years downstream. And I do think, to the second point, you have to manage that. You can't look at empty chairs and fill them. I'm working with a couple of clients now that have a planning horizon of 3 years, and they don't think that's enough, given how work-life patterns are changing. They have to look 10 and 12, 15 years downstream, because the people that are going to be working for them then are already in elementary school or starting high school. So they have to look that far downrange. And as a footnote, my advice to Chicos and to agencies is never, 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 never turn off your recruiting pipeline. You always got to be keeping a trickle of talent coming into the organization, no matter how severe the budget cuts and the hiring freezes. And we learned that lesson painfully in DOD. Jeff and I, way back in the early 90s, we shut off the tap and we paid the consequences of that in 2001. Can't turn it off. But I think at the end of the day, again, looking downstream, we have got to learn how to accommodate changing work-life patterns. And the thing that frustrates me, and I suspect it frustrates my colleagues, is that so many of these things are not rocket science. I'll go back to something that John suggested earlier. We don't know why people are leaving. How hard is it to come up with a common exit survey? that everybody takes when they leave, not just when they retire, but when they resign. So we begin to gather data. Many agencies do it, but there's no commonality, there's no trend line, and there's no way to compare. And that wouldn't be a huge lift, and the payoff would be tremendous. This easy entry, lots of people have written about it. We've all talked about it. Embracing phased retirement, really marketing it and using it strategically. There are a couple of agencies, and I'll shout out NSA as an example, who structure jobs for the people who are retiring. It's not just coming back and sort of sitting around waiting for somebody to ask them about what they did 10 years ago. They actually develop job descriptions for their reemployed annuitants and leverage their talents that way. Again, all of these things suggest a much more strategic approach to human capital, something that Jeff and John and Francis and I have been talking about for a long time. And, you know, the good news is it's not going to be solved right away, so we'll have plenty of fodder for your show, Francis.
I like that idea, especially if all three of you will agree to continue to participate. Jeff, final thoughts on each of those three points, the terms on which people decide to retire, the movement in and out, not just for millennials, but for future generations of executives, and planning Workforce 2025 by matching people with the skill sets the government will need then.
I do think people, more than anything else, retire on their own terms, on the things that are important to them. The people that they work for may make a small difference, but for the most part, it's when they're ready to go, and they know when they're ready to go. So people don't retire on a whim. The thing that's interesting to me about planning, and Ron talked about strategic human capital, and I think that's the problem we run into a lot, is that people don't view this from a strategic perspective. They don't look 5 or 10 years or 15 years down the road and look at where they're going to be. There isn't enough workforce planning going on in the federal government. There's a lot of ad hoc workforce decision making that is done on the fly as people leave, which is a terrible way to make a decision. And what workforce planning there is often done by looking in the rearview mirror exclusively and only looking at what history is telling us, you know, how many people are going to leave of a particular grade level and type of work. And there isn't enough going on looking at what kind of workforce you need 5 years or 10 years from now. It may be that, you know, 40% of people in a particular occupation are going to leave, and you think, great, now we can hire the kind of folks we need doing the kind of work we need. Mm-hmm. And so we don't do enough looking at what kind of workforce we need in the future. And I think if we don't start doing that, it's going to create more and more problems, particularly when you're looking at a workforce that will be a less stable workforce with more in and out type of movement in government. You've got to have a much better idea of what you're planning to have 5 years from now, or you won't be able to deliver on it. And I think that's a huge issue.
John, final thoughts?
Yeah, most definitely. And just picking up the thread on, instead of looking in the rearview mirror, kind of looking forward at what we need. I think agencies really have to take the time to do great strategic workforce planning, but also a workload analysis. What are their people working on? What are the skills and what are the abilities that are no longer necessary? And where do they spend the most percentage of their time? I think also giving the opportunity for career pathing. Ron had suggested that as well. And I think career pathing is incredibly important, not only for engaging employees, but also allowing them to figure out how they can move maybe within an occupation, but also outside of an occupation. And the last comment I'm going to make is I'm going to hold out hope on phased retirement. And I think if you look at the statistics in your survey, I think there are about 30% of the respondents said they're not sure if they're going to take advantage of phased retirement. And I think we really have to understand, first of all, why people aren't using it. So to Jeff's earlier point, was it the design, or is it that we just aren't marketing it? Like Ron potentially, you know, Ron had suggested kind of the marketing of it as well. I think we have to look at those individuals as the undecided voters mm-hmm. in a political campaign. And we have to go out and we have to try to find ways to inspire them to take advantage of this program that's there, and then build some momentum around it and hopefully have the ability to have a successful phased retirement program across the entire government.
Gentlemen, I want to thank you all for your input on this and participating in this special report, The Reverse Retirement Wave, Managing a Workforce That's Aging in Place. Jeff Neal of ICF International, John Salamone of FMP Consulting, and Ron Sanders of Booz Allen. Thank you all for joining me today, gentlemen.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.